Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
Good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another Wednesday of American Tennis. Every Wednesday at noon, you can tune in to the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, number 10, and the letter S network, and you can listen to American Tennis, where every week we address those things that are the hottest topics in tennis and things you just want to talk about. I wanted to remind you on the UR Tennis Network, though, every Monday, Lisa Stone has her Parenting Aces program. And folks, go to her website as well, parentingacesithink.com. Lisa really has a tremendous blog, and she writes about current issues that are necessary for parents to pay attention to, but just to tennis enthusiasts as well. That's Parenting Aces every Monday on the UR Tennis Network at noon. 2 hours from right now, Jason Haynes has his College Connection program, and each week he has one of the college coaches on from different programs in the United States, and you can learn about their program and some of the cutting issues of collegiate tennis. Of course, on the UR Tennis Network, I'm on every week at noon on Wednesday, and mine's the American Tennis Program, where we invite you to come on and stand up and speak out and address those issues that you find important for collegiate tennis, for junior tennis, for professional tennis, and every program that we're trying to do in America to make our tennis stronger and better. And Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. Every week I call upon you to please stand up and just don't go with the cliches and facts and surface things, but talk about some meat. Let's get some meat on the bone and talk about issues that are a little bit deeper than just the surface. And all we do is ask you to be professional, address issues, not people, and no man can find fault with that. But our mission is to have a forum each and every week for you to talk about issues that are current and say what you want to say. A couple things going on this week. I'm really trying to work once again on the emphasis going to rural instead of just urban programs in the United States, folks. And if you think about it, The statistics prove 72% of our professional athletes come out of rural areas, not urban areas. And my charge is that I think we've probably put too much emphasis on the urban programs. Not that we don't need the programs that we're pushing in city parks, and I wish there were more city parks, but the programs that were not so much top-down in urban areas, because I made the point yesterday on, by the way, J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis program is on every Tuesday at noon on the Yellow Ball Network. He has a network called the Yellow Ball Network. And again, check out J.P. Weber's website, We Coach Tennis. Over 2,000 members now writing on his blog that and has his Facebook that has information about current tennis events. But yesterday we were talking about this, the difference in ideology of inner city programs versus people in the country and smaller towns. And my take on this, and I really, really believe this, is that in the country, kids want to stand out. They want to do something to either help them get out of the rut of either being in a small town. Now, small towns are great, but a lot of times there's just not as much activity. That's why when the circus comes to town or some activities come to a smaller town, people do get excited about it. It's easier to promote activities in smaller towns. Towns of under 50,000 people is where 72% of our professional athletes come from. My take on it also is that in a urban environment, kids want to fit in more than they want to stand out. It's really, really takes a lot to get kids going in an urban, even though you have a tremendous amount of populations in some of the urban areas, kids really do want to fit in. I think in urban settings, we talked about this a little bit, but in urban settings, you have programs like College Park, Maryland, Chatham, New Jersey. You know, in Kansas City, you have a great program there, and some of the different programs where there are a neighborhood of tennis players that exist within a tremendous population base. You also have had some luck building players, but once again, it becomes a community. I think tennis is one of those sports where the social part of it really enhances people to get into it. But the point being is that in the inner city environment, we have struggled more in getting kids into tennis. We get the kids into it, but they don't stay with it. I always say we're using a barbless hook in exposing the kids, but it's level 2 and 3 when it gets real important to the kids where we're having a hard time keeping them in there. So that's just a little commentary here starting out. I wanted to talk today, though, about some issues. Now, we've got so many fronts going on in the world of tennis. I mean, we've got the 10 and under issue. And again, it is an issue because not just that so many coaches are against it and they think that maybe it's not the best thing out there going. Most of the pushback has been that in the 10 and under program have been the mandates to only allow kids to play with the green ball, and that's socialistic at the base. Everybody knows that, and you cannot go against people's freedom in forcing people to do this, and the top-down management is the problem there. On the junior tennis front, the point system seems to be the biggest battle and the biggest controversy there. The point system, many of you know this, but some of you may not, but I don't know, was the 2005-06 in there or something, the USTA decided to use the computer's full blast and wide open and add up points for kids playing, and it seems logical. Kids would go out and play more tournaments, try to pick up more points, but this ended up becoming a point-chasing situation where if kids were a little bit wealthier, literally their parents can fly them anywhere in the country, and they can pick up more points, and This was quite funny. I was recruiting at that time. I was at Clemson University, and I was one of my last years there. I was recruiting a kid that was top 15 in the United States, and one of the coaches walked up to me and said, "But is he really ranked 16 in the United States? He's not that good, coach." And I said, "Well, his ranking's pretty darn good." And I watched him play two or three times. I said, "You know, you're really right. How in the world did he get all his points?" He said, "Look, that guy goes around and plays all the tournaments, and he picks up points and does it that way." So the long story short there is that through the point system, I think that the tennisrecruiting.net really got a big surge because kids found out that probably the star system there and learning how to be a one-star, two-star, three-star player, four-star, five-star, blue chip, the coaches go there to get sort of an early indicator of the level of players, but really the rankings are not accurate. Everybody knows that. USTA would probably say they're not completely accurate. They change quite often, and it's not based on head-to-head wins and wins of importance. It's just a lot of times kids chasing points. Now, in college, of course, the third thing, the third front has been the college scene, and I want to talk a lot about that today because I've gotten a fantastic paper written by probably I think it's the Yoda of tennis right now, and that's Doc Brown, Dr. Ray Brown. And he sent me this beautiful, beautiful paper that spells out so many things about the importance of keeping our scoring system pure and staying grounded in fundamentals with how we approach the game. And also I wanted to talk about Coach Randy Blumendahl's presentation. I'm hoping that I get Coach Blumendahl on the line here. He has a meeting that he has to go to, but Coach Blumendahl and some other coaches will be calling in today, they said, to comment on this. But Coach Blumendahl's paper is absolutely brilliant. It was a one-page paper done about 3 weeks ago to sort of spell out to coaches in his region, at his regional event, some very, very, what seems to be complex issues, but he made them very straightforward and clear-cut, and I think he solved the problem of college tennis if people listened to him and just people sort of not hunkered down in their ideologies as much. But in the college scene, too, the problem has become the ITA's mandating and the top-down management. And that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, is that why people feel in power feel so compelled to do top-down management to the place where it puts handcuffs on our own entrepreneurs and our own ingenuity, and the kids are just being stifled, and we're losing numbers. It's not working. Socialism has never worked, folks. In the history of the world, socialism has never worked. Go try to find some place where it works, and the best you'll find is generic mediocrity, and it will not work. And even even in Europe, people think, well, we've got so many kids playing, but excellence is not coming out of Europe, folks. It's mediocrity, and there's a lot of people playing tennis and things, and they've got some programs that they've instituted. But if you want excellence, it's really in capitalistic form. Tennis is a capitalist endeavor. It's something where it's survival of the fittest, and it's not set up to be just a participation event. I keep telling everybody that participation will not breed excellence, but excellence always breeds participation, and that's something that we have to really push to the forefront if we want to become excellent again. Participation trophies, participation. My kid's a great kid. My kid is a terrific kid at Middletown Elementary School, and my kid does this, and all these participation trophies do nothing except champion the weak. And when you champion the weak, we end up weakening our real champions. So these are the things I want to talk about today. And I've got a caller or two here already on the line. And if you just hold on, I got to set the table. And I want to set the table with Doc Brown's paper. But here's something that I've got written here. And again, all of these issues we're talking about top-down management. This is anti-top-down management, top-down over-management, top-down micromanagement. Folks, the key to power is empowering those under you. Power should be implied, does not have to be exhibited. The greatest example ever that comes to mind is George Washington. He won one of the greatest battles for freedom in the history of the world. He gave up all his power, went back to his Mount Vernon home, and the King of England, when he did that, said, "This is truly the greatest man I've ever heard of and seen of in my lifetime." But the whole United States government and our freedom is set up by implied power. But power is given to the people, and it works when power is given to the people. Entrepreneurs spring up when it's given to the people. In tennis, if we want tennis to thrive again, we must give the power to the ground troops, to the people, to those who are in the trenches. This point system thing in junior tennis has got to go. ITA mandates and dictating and not paying attention to what the coaches and players, the collegiate players want to do, and just going for the entertainment part of it or instead of education, that's got to go. The 10 and under mandate has got to go. And it's that simple, folks. And why? It's a war of ideas, and it should be that. If their ideas win out in the marketplace of competition, then so be it. They will rise and they will succeed. Just like, daggone, Prince Rackets came to my mind. Prince Rackets, in 1980, when they first came out, do you know, people laughed. And I can remember being at Kalamazoo, and a couple kids were using Prince Rackets. Tori Baxter, actually, was the promotional rep for Prince. She got Prince Rackets in some of these kids' hands, and people laughed, and people would not use them. And you know what? I'm not a big racket person. I'm a wood racket person all the way. But they won the war of ideas. They won the war of promotion. They started with the ground troops, and they built up their popularity through the ground troops. They did not mandate everybody play with a certain racket, with a certain ball, with anything. They won the war of ideas. I think that it is it's a horrible move to force people to do things. At very worst, it borders on something that could destroy our sport, and it basically has cut the heart out of a lot of people to try to mandate. And any time you try to put yourself above others by mandating things. The high horse is a lonely perch. You know, coercive leadership, you can force it on people. Even as a coach, folks, even as a coach, yeah, we have rules we have to have the players abide by, but I need to get the players, I hate the word buy-in, but I've got to get my players to believe more in the not just the rule of law, but they have to believe in the content and the reasons behind it. And why discipline is a good thing for their mentality of creativity and their mentality of one entrepreneurship and doing it on their own. They need to win me over, these daggone mandating top-down government people. You know, if they can't win me over, they just try to force me into something. A good man, a good woman will be like a bucking horse. If the horse believes in its rider, it will run till its heart bursts, trying to prove that he loves its rider. And I will too. I will give my life for that which I believe in. And all of you will too out there. You will give your life for your family, for your children. What are those things that you would die for? Would you die for your faith? would you die for great things? But to get people to something like believe in something that's being forced on them, it might be a great idea, this 10 and under tennis, the top-down management in junior tennis with the point system, the college, the ITA mandating these abbreviated scoring systems that bastardizes our game. To get force us to do that, we will, a good man, a good woman, will be a bucking bronco that will buck that rider off over and over and over and over again. So win us over, folks. Win us over, you people in leadership positions. Don't try to force feed us, and you won't. You'll get a mule. You'll get a donkey. You'll get a plow horse at best, but you will never get a thoroughbred to do that when they're forced. The philosophical battle of education and entertainment is all but too familiar, and it is one that we've been fighting for a long time. It's a completely different ideology that will be different and will put people in two camps no matter what. You know, those that feel that skill set and ability is the most important thing, it's always a person's talent and not their work ethic. These are the people that will usually push the ideology of less work, all-inclusiveness, cream rises somehow just magically, and work. It's a white collar mentality with a white collar work ethic is what we're talking about here. This won't work. I've often said that it is a white collar mentality but a blue collar work ethic. But those believe that mindset and work ethic will always lean towards the education side of things. The people who believe in that mindset is work ethic is not as important, then they will labor. They will labor with the work ethic part of it. It's an ideology. It's an ideology battle. With a battle of ideology, not much gets done, or will it anything get done as we try to win people over to our side, whatever your side may be. It's usually the people in the middle that will win the elections a week from now, and it's the people in the middle that we need to educate and sort of ask them that where's the common ground here that you believe in. I mean, do you believe in education? Do you believe in entertainment? Education and entertainment both would be the greatest of all goals, wouldn't it? And if you have no education, no entertainment, that would be pretty awful. But if you had to pick between education and entertainment, which one in your heart of hearts, folks, would you pick up, and which would you stand for? And, you know, we all have to answer that. And if you can honestly say, look, I'm for entertainment first, you might be for these abbreviated formats. You might not understand the importance of the educational aspect, but you probably will go for the abbreviated formats. Teachers and educators will always probably go for the educational aspect first. Then we get into teaching and coaching for these things. So it's an ideology problem. And, you know, in matters of principle, stand like a rock, Thomas Jefferson says, but in matters of method, you can flow with the stream. Now, what is a method and what is a method and methodology and what is the rock? And, you know, so it scoring system, to me, is a bedrock principle. It's one of our most it's one of our most sacred heirlooms. It is absolutely one of our most sacred heirlooms. We want to talk about this. I've got a beautiful paper to read you, Dr. Ray Brown. I hope if Dr. Brown will call in today, if he's listening, that would be pretty awesome because I could have him comment on that and looking for Coach Blumendahl's call here in a minute. But we'll be right back. This is Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis. We'll be right back.
Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years' experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I wanted to tell you about our 2014 competition camp. Go to my website, ChuckCreasy.net, that's K-R-I-E-S-E, ChuckCreasy.net, and see our competition camp for your son, your daughter, or your tennis player that wants to learn some new ways of competing and some interesting ways of managing momentum and learn much more about the game than just hitting in forehands and backhands. Go to my website, ChuckCreasy.net. Make them in America. We need to make them in America, and we're proud so much of the multiple champions that we have had in the sport of tennis, and we absolutely can do this, will do this, and it's just a matter of time. Hats off to every bit of effort that those folks at the USTA, the ITA, and all of our organizations do, but remember, folks, the bureaucracies can never make a champion. The champion makes the champion themselves. One of the things I've been harping on the past 2 months or more has been the push by ITA to try to mandate no ad scoring to our collegiate programs. Now, the damage that can be done, I've seen it done before, and as being around as many years as I have in coaching and in teaching, and those players who have been subject to it over the decades and have had to play no ad scoring absolutely dislike the scoring system, as well as we have many, many juniors and collegiate players have spoken out. But I don't think I've had a better explanation of why it's bad other than it is a scoring system is a bedrock of our programs, but this most, the wisdom of Doc Brown, here I put, to add or not to add, I'm going to read some of it to you. It said, drama is the principal attraction of athletic competition. What a great statement to start out with. Competitors vying in a contest requiring strength, skill, mental fortitude to determine the contest will prevail over all others. There are three keys to drama. Here he goes. One is the unfolding events over time. An event which is settled in minutes has no drama. This is well illustrated in the format of a movie script where the crisis occurs at plot point one that changes the lives of the protagonists so severely that they are forced to begin a complex journey to regain what they have lost. But as the drama unfolds, things get worse and worse until the plot at point two, it all seems lost. This is the climactic point of the movie. It always comes to a climactic point. But then through some act of heroism, the protagonists overcome impossible odds to find their own way back to the love of their life or a life lost, which was once so cherished. All of this takes time to unfold, and athletic events are organized around rules that allow for the necessary time for a drama to unfold, much like a movie. It says baseball, which we've got the World Series going on right now, requires three outs instead of one to change sides. There's a reason for this. Olympic skiing requires multiple runs to decide the outcome. These rules are precisely designed to allow the drama to unfold as the event comes to be. Point number two, he says the second principal element of the drama is that the outcome must not be decided by chance. Chance robs the actors that provide the opportunity to act, to use their skills and emotional capacity to confront their flight or to defeat their adversary. Three strikes are usually necessary to reduce the element of chance in batting. A movie script will be a failure if the protagonist overcomes their plight by chance rather than by effort. Wow, is that a big point. Chance eliminates drama and makes the outcome of the event uninteresting, if not important, to the audience. Instead of an outcome being decided by chance, overcoming the foil of chance by power of the human spirit is what is desired, and that's what we want to see. Thus, the rules of sport must, in addition to providing time to allow the human drama to unfold and for the audience to connect to this drama, the rules must guard against the outcome being decided by chance. It is so true. He uses movies. I've often talked about this, but folks, I will wake up in the middle of the night, as many of us may do at this stage in life, but we get up in the middle of the night, and when you can't go back to sleep, I'll turn on Netflix. And you know what I've been watching? I watched Alfred Hitchcock, 26-minute, which they used to be 30-minute weekly programs, Alfred Hitchcock's. The drama is incredible. They will have two or three actors, no props. They're all in black and white, but they're incredible. The same with The Twilight Zone. Incredible writing by Rod Serling. Incredible writing by Alfred Hitchcock. But it is such a difference. The drama is incredible. Just like the drama of a match, a tennis match, it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I've got many, many things to talk about there, but Dr. Brown brings up, if our heroes were overcome impossible odds by a coin toss or by chance, we would left very unsatisfied, and it would be as if the movie only lasted 10 minutes or so. We want to see human beings confront the complexities, impossible challenges, and overcome the odds through strength, skill, determination, persistence, courage, and not by the randomness. A third principle, he says, required for the drama is combined emotional, intellectual, and physical skill necessary to confront the overwhelming odds or to defeat a worthy adversary. All sports at the same level contain this element, and the highest level of professionalism, all sports must contain this element if they are to be relevant. And what are we? I mean, the ideology that does not understand this is, people can just say younger people do not. I've heard this argument. Younger people just do not have the concentration span. Well, excuse me, younger people are biologically the same as older people once were when they were young. But maybe they're being stimulated a little differently. They will get hooked on the game, not through the pure excitement that, look, excitement is like going to the doggone amusement park and you ride this roller coaster that you're afraid of, and then you ride it again, and it's only about half as exciting. And then you ride it again, you say, oh, wow. And then you ride it again, it's boring, and you say, let's move on. That's excitement. Drama. Drama and excitement, dwindles with each occurrence, whereas drama intensifies with each denial. Dr. Brown's points are so, so well put together here. He says that sports are perfectly designed to ensure that all three principles of these dramas are present and are on stage. And so is the nature of tennis. The rules of tennis have been brilliantly designed to assure the human drama of athletic competition will unfold over time and culminate in the battles. And the wills creating this human drama, whose conclusion is to determine the human qualities, not by chance, but by skill, perseverance, and what he has talked about. And isn't this true? Hard to pick up is absolutely hard to put down. Easy to pick up is easy to put down. Of note, the no-ad scoring that is trying to be mandated assures the possibility of battle unfolding over time that shifts back and forth. Oh my gosh, this guy is brilliant. He says it does not assure the possibility of battle unfolding that shifts back and forth by great courage, effort, skill, determination, guts, and one that it is one that only allows potential excitement by chance now and then. The ad rule assures that mere chance cannot and should not decide the outcome of a closely fought contest. That's why all the players wanted. If no ad was so good, people would be wanting to do no ad scoring. We're trying to please the entertainment aspect again, the people who look at tennis just sort of as an entertainment activity. It's very, very obvious, those of you who have been in college tennis or coach in college tennis, the crowd is usually made up of either tennis enthusiasts or by the parents of people or somebody that you know. I know for myself, I'll go to even matches at the U.S. Open, and I will watch somebody that I know, but or someone that's interesting, but actually you basically need to have that element of human drama and what happens to the person and the complete unmasking of their lack of game or the unfolding of their great games that happen. And we're certainly looking at this in the wrong way. We had a coach tell me recently this summer that it's just a game. We should just try to do anything to make it fun. And I said, it's the dumbing down of something that would be something like chess turning into checkers. And Coach Blumenthal here, I wanted to read his statement. And this is excellent. He said, collegiate tennis is an individual sport and collegiate tennis is a team sport. Both of these can be relevant if, and he presented this October 17th, the talk for some time for some kind of change has been ongoing. The ITA contends that this should include both the abbreviation of dual matches, the dual match format, and also the changing of the traditional scoring system. Both of these are said to save time. The claim that both changes are needed to save our sport. Whether factual or not, the claim has been stated as the reason why more than 400 collegiate teams, folks, have been dropped. This is not true. First of all, collegiate teams have been dropped because of their, that's one reason, lack of relevance on a campus. That's, and the athletic director says, do we have enough money? No, we don't have enough money. What sports are we going to drop? Let's drop this sport, that sport, this sport. Which one should we drop? Well, tennis. Tennis has basically played at a funny time of the day, and we have maybe all international students. None of the parents are going to complain, and that's why you drop it. It is not. It should be a sport that's always kept because we have all of the facilities in place, tremendous facilities, but we also have beside all of the facilities being in place, we have a great group of teaching coaches, and there are not that many participants that we really have to have. It's not a very expensive sport. And then if you look at the alumni that come out of tennis, it is phenomenal, phenomenal what most tennis players become. They usually become doctors, lawyers, and people of high income that can give back to programs. So why in the world would we be dropping sports, and why the lack of relevance is just so obvious at this time? Well, there's other reasons, and there's three reasons I've alluded to before. The influx of international students, and there's nothing against international students, but they've taken up almost all of the spots in collegiate programs. And people argue, well, we just want to have a winning team. Well, people don't care even if you have a winning team. And most of the international students do not give back to their schools. And, you know, there are some fantastic international people and students. Where would we be without a Harry Hopman, without a Dennis Vandermeer, and without people who have given so much to our sport of tennis here in the United States? But the point being is that not to the place where we really cannot fund or take care of our own here in the United States. And so we never had any I love J.P. Weber's show a few weeks ago. He's against limiting the international students. And really, I think that, again, it should be, as I said earlier, the battle of ideas. We are just not winning that. I would like to see some incentives for those teams, like J.P. Weber said, that would allow the USTA or somebody that has a lot of money, but to give grants or some type of reward for those teams that win with American players. That's the way to go about it. Let's incentivize American players, not just tell them. We're not telling the international players you're bad for being here, or our coaches you're bad for recruiting these, but we need to be addressing this issue in a different way that is a win-win. And we could do it by incentivizing those teams that have mainly Americans. Title IX is a great rule, very poorly implemented, but we never addressed the issues of how it dismantled so many men's sports. That's one of the reasons we've lost 400 teams. The other reason is in 1991-92, Ken Heidinger just wrote a brilliant three-paragraph statement in We Coach Tennis this last week that explained it so well. But primarily all of the rules changed in the early 90s, and it just really dismantled programs that believed in hard work. It dismantled the blue-collar work ethic in the sport of tennis, and they made it easier, they dumbed it down, and it did not make it better. So those are the real reasons, but the ITA here has pushed forward that, hey, it's about the scoring system, and factual or not, Coach Blumenthal says here, the claim has been stated that the reason why we've had more than 400 teams dropped over the years, scoring coaches are looking for answers. The question becomes just what are the answers? Listen to what it says. Number one, format of college matches a completely different issue than the scoring system and should be dealt with as such. The scoring system is part of our great heritage of tennis and is used inclusively worldwide to measure the standard of players' skill set one against another. All over the world, our heritage, it is what unites us is the scoring system, folks. It is a constant to the game at multiple levels and should be protected as such. It is our constant. We should not have different scoring system for different levels. There's no way to measurement then, and that's one of the problems when you start bastardizing the scoring system. The format of a collegiate match is not as much as a constant. The format is something completely different. These should be treated independently for progress of some type to be made. Here's what it says, number two. The sport of college tennis should be treated as an individual sport with team opportunity instead of a team sport with individual opportunity. Whoa, that is a good statement. Much like the sports of golf, track and field, swimming and diving, tennis is an individual sport. However, our sport of tennis has been marketed for many years as a team sport. This approach has made the packaging and marketing of the sport very difficult. Whereas other individual sports have been marketed as individual sports with team scoring opportunity, thus golf, track and field, swimming, tennis has been marketed as a team sport with individual opportunities. That doesn't match. That's a square peg in a round hole. It doesn't work. That's apples and oranges. We are an individual sport. This is so true. This is the source of the marketing problem with college tennis. Team tennis is most often used as a participation event and not a performance event at different levels. At the college level, this has made popularity and marketing opportunities very random and quite frustrating. Could it be the great opportunity might be available if the sport made simple adjustments in its presentation and not by making dramatic changes to a fundamental cornerstone of the sport, such as scoring system? Number three, Coach Blumenthal, fantastic idea here. Splitting the seasons could benefit players, coaches, athletic department, communities, and present many marketing opportunities. Listen to what he has to say here, folks. Listen to this. This is a great idea. He notes first, it could be best to play the team format of the season in the fall using excellent weather and football crowd opportunities to promote an 8 to 10 week team season. Winter and spring might be best to support an individual season as coaches could balance weather and travel with those opportunities needed for their players. However, the issue of whether or not teams should be in the fall and spring should be not be a sticking point nor a stumbling block to the need to split our season into distinct two sports. Now think about this. He said the benefit are unbelievable for coaches. First, we're going to go to athletic departments and athletic programs. If you did this, just like track and field has indoor track, outdoor track, and cross country using the same athletes, three sports, less one-third of the money of an individual sport, think of how tennis could double what they get for half the price, or for the same price as they're using now. This is brilliant. Athletic directors would love this. For the community, think about having football games on a weekend with a tennis match on a Friday night and a Sunday afternoon. How many times after a ball game would it be nice to hang around and watch a nice, good tennis match on a Sunday afternoon, leisurely Sunday afternoon? But on Friday nights, the night before a football game, are you kidding me? We could have a couple thousand people coming to these matches. What a great idea, Coach Blumenthal. He actually brought this idea up more than 10 years ago. Benefits for the coaches, be easy, folks. Players would come off of the summer. We'd go through a 10-week season. We could do any format. If you want to do the Hokey Pokey show and get it on TV, fine. We could have a TV format if you wanted to do that. We could have the best format that works for the crowd without bastardizing the scoring system. Come on. Do not bastardize the scoring system. It is a sacred heirloom. Do not mess with it. Format is different, but the marketing opportunities, the chance for the community and the crowds would be unbelievable. It would be tremendous. What a great idea, Coach Blumenthal. And anyhow, here we go in his conclusion. This is really just a great summation of what he's done in one paragraph here. We have dedicated people working together. I mean, here again, we have great people in all of these bureaucracies, and the bureaucracy does not make the person. We can't lose our personal touch. Do not jam this down our throat. Bureaucratic ITA, bureaucratic USTA, bureaucratic any program that just tries to jam it down our throats, all wrong, wrong thing to do. We have many dedicated people working together in collegiate tennis to save our sport and make it prosper. We have absolutely had a disconnect over the recent years. But it's not on purpose, but it is not necessary to have this division in our ranks. It is my submission that the disconnect is not with each other as much as the paradigm that we have developed for our sport by trying to market it into something that it is not. We need a marketing to market it as an individual sport with a team, as a team opportunity, instead of a team sport with individual opportunity. Splitting the season to put emphasis on each in their own unique ways would do this. The future for our sport is quite bright if we can see this and act now. The changes would be relatively simple to implement and would not risk serious disruption of our time-honored fundamentals of our game. This is a fantastic thing. See Coach Randy Blumendahl. Email him, folks, at rblumen, I think it's rbloemen, at indiana.edu. It's really good. Look, the dumb down never works, whether it's in academics, whether it's in tennis and golf. Oh, my gosh, do you believe some people are promoting playing golf with a hole as big as a pizza pie? What a ridiculous notion to make it easier. Are you kidding me? I went fly fishing this last weekend up in the mountains, caught 4 fish in 2 days, probably was in the river freezing about 12 hours in 2 days. One day, 5 hours, the next day, 7. I caught 4 fish, but it remains the highlight of my last 2 months of things that were the anticipation, the suspense, the drama of trying to catch fish, trout, out of a river on a fly rod. And it was comical how buddies with me kept saying, look, if we just put corn on, we could catch trout, all the trout we wanted. And to stay with the fly rod and to make it a tough thing was really where people have to understand that this is what it's about. Over and over again, when a teacher makes things harder, folks, the youngsters, might complain initially, but never, ever, ever have you seen somebody come back and complain at a different date and say, you were too hard. 100% of the time, people will come back and say, why didn't you push me more? Why were you easy on me? Why didn't you see the talent in me? Why didn't you see the potential? Why didn't you stretch me? Never will a child go back and tell a parent you were basically had too much discipline in the house. And we're talking about strict discipline. We're not talking about enforcement of discipline in bad ways, but we're talking about the discipline. 100% of the time, a child will go back and say, why didn't you discipline me? Do you know that discipline is a way of showing that you love somebody? Making it hard is a way of showing that we see inside of you great potential to stand up and to be counted in a way different than other people. Speaking to the king and the queen in youngsters is what we need to do, folks. We do not need to dumb down. So it's incredible. In the end, too, it's a matter, and I said this recently to somebody, but I heard it from you want to see a great movie? The movie that impacted my life and my whole life, and I love movies, but at the age of 17, I'm a junior in high school and trying to get a sort of a lock on things and how you try hard and everything. Most impacting thing I had to do, I had to write a term paper on A Man for All Seasons, the book, the play. And at that time in 1967, they had a the movie out, Best Picture Year, was Paul Scofield, A Man for All Seasons. King Henry VIII was trying to change the faith to permit him to divorce his wife Catherine and to marry Anne Boleyn, and of course it cost him his head. It was St. Thomas More, but the most fantastic integrity. Another one based on integrity: Beckett, Peter O'Toole, and Richard Burton. If you like movies, it's on Netflix right now. Beckett is a fantastic movie based on integrity, based on those things that are important. But in the end, it is a matter of love. When Sir Thomas More was asked, why are you sticking up for this principle? And the Duke of Norfolk said, why won't you come with us for friendship? And Thomas More said, you know, if I stand before God and you stand before God, and I'm condemned to hell because I did not stand up for those things that I believed in and were central to my being, would you come with me for friendship? And he absolutely had quotes throughout this movie that were all based on these things. But in the end, he said it's a matter of love. It's a love of God. It's a love of principle. It's a love of those things that stand constant, that cannot be changed. And there are constants in our world and our constants in our universe, whether it's our Constitution, whether it's the Bible, whether it's the principles that we try to hold fast in our sport, in our jobs, with our children. But there has to be constants. Without these constants, things run amok, because these constants provide a rudder for our ship and for those things that we need to pass on to our children. You know, and if we honor the game will honor us. I love the sport of tennis. I know that you listening out there, you love the sport of tennis. You wouldn't be listening to this show right now, and you wouldn't be doing the things you do. But in the end, it's a matter of love. You either love it to the extent that you will fight for it and try to preserve its wonderful heritage, or you let it go and think of it something whimsical. But if we honor it, it will honor us. Honoring the game, and folks, believe me, a bad rule is like a very bad law. Once you implement these, they're very hard to implement. Bad rules are easy to put in, very hard to get out. It just basically dumbs down and nullifies, or basically dilutes, pollutes, and prostitutes, you know, are the things that we're trying to stand for. Ideology, whatever your ideology is, just remember that this is based deep in your heart, and the principle comes from those things based deep in your heart. I take my hat off to Coach Randy Blumendahl for his work, what he's been doing. Coach Ray Brown, Doc Brown, awesome out there, just really, really very thankful for what you're doing. But folks, listen to us again here. I've got one caller on, area code 678. We only got a minute. I'm glad you came on to the show. Any quick comments?
Your early comments were great. Coach J.P. Weber here. I was listening to you about the empowering the entrepreneur and all the good stuff. So I'm very much in agreement with you.
Thanks very much. And everybody, listen to Coach J.P. Weber's show on Tuesdays on the Yellow Ball Network. And also that We Coach Tennis on the website. So thank you for the work Coach Weber does. And folks, we've got to go. I'm just thankful for this opportunity Sport of Tennis give me. And it's a matter of love. And I'm not in love with tennis like a human being or like I would with things that are... But it means so much to our lives that let's preserve those precious things that should not be changed. And again, George Washington says, in matters of principles, we stand like a rock. Matters of method, flow with the stream. Scoring system is a matter of principle. God bless you guys.
Made in America.
Of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or with a loss. And regardless of your ideology on and beliefs, stick to firm beliefs. There are constants. Everything becomes a variable if we don't have those constants and those rudders in our life. God bless each and every one of you, and fight the good fight. Let's put American tennis back on top. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.